Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show in its new home at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday evening. Yes, that's right. This is your weekly fix of rugby union chat. Now, look, we don't go through all of the matches. We do that on a Sunday evening at 8 p.m. So if you want to have a review of all the games from the weekend, including the Bledisloe Cup, all the Farrow Palmer Cup games and the Midas Hen Cup games, and then go back and listen to our review show that we do every Sunday at 8 p.m. You know what? You can listen to that on our Facebook page, YouTube channel, all of those kind of wonderful places, if you like to watch us and our pretty faces, or if you prefer just to listen as you're moving around, then we have a podcast as well. You can go and check that out on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of those wonderful places. Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio. So this evening, I am joined by the Saxpert, and apparently that's not nothing to do with a musical instrument, but it's about stats or something. I don't know. It's all about numbers. But Boa, how are you doing, sir?
Very well, thanks. As always, my highlight of the week to everyone. Welcome. And I have to say, normal service resumed at Eden Park on Sunday. And boy, we had a few moments of brilliance. Plenty to talk about, Paul. Plenty to talk about.
There is plenty to talk about because we have got the Bledisloe Cup action. We've got the Springboks pulling out of the Rugby Championship. What else we got? We've got news around the Black Ferns games towards the end of the year. And we might even touch on some stuff that World Rugby has talked about. As well. And if you're wondering why am I looking down when I'm doing that, that's because I'm scribbling down my notes to remind myself to talk about those things because, seat of our pants stuff this week, as I've not done any pre-show notes. But we'll get through it all anyway. So, Bella, look, we need to have a quick chat about the Bledisloe Cup games. I say not going to in-depth analysis of them because we did that last night or Sunday night, but you said coming into it that you saw that the All Blacks would be putting the Wallabies away by loads of points, and then they go and draw the first game. Surely a little bit of humble pie, surely from you there, that actually this Wallabies side is a bit better than you anticipated.
They were, but at the same time, the All Blacks were awful first game. I think their error rate, missed tackles, they're very passive, and 72% they kicked the ball away, which is pretty unusual, and then, you know, fast forward 1 week, they drop their kicking percentage to about 40%, and then they put 27 points. And keep in mind, even at Eden Park, it's my personal view, I think the All Blacks are far from the finished product. They had, you know, sheer moments of brilliance for about, you know, 2 to 3 minutes where they went edge to edge, end to end. You know, the Wallabies, they just looked in a different league, a much lesser league, and the All Blacks just blew them apart. But again, you know, there were a lot of errors. There were a lot of handling errors. They turned it over, and then for large periods of the second half, the last quarter specifically, you know, they were very happy to just give the ball back to the Aussies and just play that passive defensive role. So there's probably a lot of work-ons, but the reality is to beat the All Blacks, you have to probably have 30 men on the field and hope that the All Blacks play some very average footy.
You're watching a totally different game to everybody else. The Wallabies had two tries disallowed, which would have made it to what, close to 21-27, which makes a one score game. A lot of the All Blacks, two out of the four tries were from turnovers. They weren't necessarily building or creating that much or breaking down the Aussie defence particularly. So you're watching a different game to me.
Well, the Wallabies in game two missed 39 tackles. 39, that's right. 39 tackles. At test level, you don't miss 39 tackles. And you have to say, if it was a different All Black side, in a different sort of year or era, you know, it would have been 75, 80 points. You don't miss almost 40 tackles and expect to be in the pitch. And also, I have to mention, there were some atrocious tackle techniques. Three players in particular. Harry Wilson, the Fijian winger, Dagunu, and of course, Hunter Paisami, you know, rolling into the shoulder, going chin high. And the worst part was the officials missed them. And I seriously have to say...
If we're talking about tackle technique, Joe Moody has got to have the worst one. He went and got himself with his head in the wrong area.
Yeah, well, that's just... That was just a bit of a freak injury. And of course, rightly pointed, his head was, you know, pretty much flush on that hip bone on Hannigan. And we just, you know, wish that he recovers very quickly from that, but that didn't look good at all. But I have to say, the Wallabies, you know, to miss almost 40 tackles, that is just ridiculous. You do not do that even at a club game.
But you say, to miss 40 tackles and to still be in the game is quite incredible. I agree. They definitely look, the All Blacks are the better side, don't get me wrong. But to say that they're in a sort of different league, miles better, I don't see that. I think they are a better side than the Wallabies, as I say, but I don't think they are that far ahead of the Wallabies at the moment. So hence a draw and a competitive game, two wonderful test matches to watch. And I think the scoreline perhaps was bigger than perhaps the play gap between the two sides, I believe.
Well, I'd like to see the All Blacks, a full-strength All Black side, playing a lot more ball in hand. That's edge-to-edge and width of the field. More constructive set plays and move away from this sort of kicking game. You know, they seem to want to play large parts of the game where they play without the ball, they kick it to the opposition. Move away from that and just go, you know, absolute hell for leather. It's going to be a difference. It's going to be absolute carnage. So when that happens... I guess we will see the true reflection.
Aaron, don't worry, I'll come back to your comment in the live chat. But I think part of the reason that the All Blacks do kick so much is because they're trying to create broken field play. And when they create broken field play, that's when they're really dangerous. And I think it's a specific tactic to kick the ball. It's something they were doing a lot under when they had Ben Smith at the back there, was to put up contestable kicks that he could challenge for and create that broken field opportunity to attack when the defence isn't set. Because modern day defences, when they're set, are incredibly difficult to break down. And I think that's an active attacking tactic to kick it so much.
Yeah, look, I understand that. But if you look at both games, the All Blacks did three set plays, strike moves, and they scored three tries. So I have absolutely no idea why they want to move away from that. And I thought the best try from a set play was that very simple try, 5 meters out, nice flat ball. Jack Goodhue takes it right in front of his chin, literally busts the gain line. Very poor tackle technique from I think it was James O'Connor. Sets the ball up. Aaron Smith just scoots on the short side. Try time. So
yeah, but that's because there are two times when it's possible to attack modern defences. One is at set piece when all the forwards are basically tied up in one place, be it a line out or a scrum. And the second one is when that's set, when the defense isn't set, which is broken field play. If you go through phases, actually, once they're set, it can be very difficult to score. And hence, that's why, yeah, you say they scored set piece play and they scored basically kick returns or broken field play, as we saw with Caleb Clark's break. But actually breaking down the a defense is extremely difficult. Most of those missed tackles were from broken field play or from set piece moves when you had either Caleb Clark returning kicking or Bonham Barrett getting out on the outside and using his pace. Those two guys accounted for a lot of the missed tackles in that game. But actually going through the phases, it's difficult. Aaron says their problem with high kicks was the Aussies were changing lines and getting in the way of chasers. The rest were not calling it. Every team does that. Let's be blunt here. It's not just the Aussies. Every team does that. And if the referees and let's be honest, rugby essentially is legalized cheating. We've done a whole show about this before. And if the referee doesn't call it, then hey, it's legal. I say every team pushes the envelope or pushes the line or sees where the line is, etc. So yeah, try and suggest that the Wallabies are the only ones that were doing it in that game. I'm sorry, every team tries to do it.
Yeah, Nocturnal's just put a comment there saying you need solid scrums and perfect lineouts. Yeah. Look, if you look at the Australian, the Wallabies, the error rate, you know, they made 17 handling errors. So there was ample opportunity for the All Blacks to strike from scrums as well as lineouts. And they're very, very good in the lineout. But coming back to the point about high tackles, the Wallabies tackle technique is extremely poor. It is not good enough at test level. If you saw on a number of occasions, there were plenty of Wallabies running in at and onto each other, and it looked really silly. And they were clearly going above the sternum or the nipple line. Now, for some strange reason, Angus Gardner and also Paul Williams, a number of instances, for example, I think it was the 8th minute, when Caleb Clark made that sliding great straight through the middle, Hunter Paisami comes in, swings with his shoulder, and he makes contact with shoulder and, of course, the forearm of Caleb Clark. And Clark bumps him off and he puts him on his backside. He then gets up again, goes towards the left edge, right in front of the touch judge. And then just before the whistle goes off, there was an advantage for a knock-on, big swinging arm onto Ardie Savea. Now, all this was missed. But the point I'm trying to make is, Wallabies, they've been working on some sort of weird technique, wanting to go high, confine the space or limit what the All Blacks can do with the offload. But clearly, it was an absolute fail because 39 missed tackles.
Yep. There were a lot of missed tackles, absolutely. And tackle technique does need to improve. Another thing we need to remember about both of these sides is, look, where are we in the Rugby World Cup cycle? We are these are the first tests we've had since the World Cup. Both sides bringing in new players after players have either retired or gone overseas. Players like Caleb Clark, Vaia, trying to remember who else was on the pitch. And Jordy Barrett playing a bigger role or in a new role. Rico Iwani in a new role over those two games. Also some examples. Hodgman was also new from the All Blacks. Similarly, the Wallabies got a whole bunch of, I think they had five or was it seven debutants in that first test match. So, look, both of these sides have got a lot of, to improve on. They're very raw at the moment. So we should expect a certain level of error rates or their attack structures not to be fine-tuned by at all at this stage because we are 4 years away from Rugby World Cup. These are new sites. I do want to just go back to one of Aaron's comments. He said, yeah, two tries disallowed. One was held up, the other was illegal movement. Absolutely. They were both correctly disallowed. I wasn't saying that they should have been given. What I'm saying is that the Wallabies were that close to getting another 14 points. The scoreline, they could easily have had more points than they had. They left points out there.
And interestingly, you can see the pattern here when it comes to the official, the referees and the TMOs. And, you know, this is not really a criticism of anything. It's just an observation, so to speak. They seem to be getting all the technical stuff. They seem to be able to pick the bones right of all the technical decisions, but they seem to miss the really simple stuff, like the high shots right in front of the eyes, a foot on touch, real simple things like that. Hopefully, this is being discussed at HQ in much simpler terms, and this gets fixed real quickly because, you know, at the professional level, these guys, they get paid. This is what they do for a living. If they're able to pick the real technical stuff, pick the bones out of the hard stuff and be missing the real simple stuff, we've got a problem. We certainly have a problem.
And I mean, one of the things that Nigel Owens has said before is that, look, there is so much. He could find basically an infringement every single ruck if he wanted to. It's about deciding which ones have impacted play. Also, the law book for rugby is just way too complex. There's too many things for referees really to be looking at. Let's be honest, that's one of the things you've got to say around. Oh, I've gone blank. The ex New Zealand rugby CEO, also Welsh CEO. That we had in the show about a month or so ago now, with his rugby 14 or idea.
Rugby rules, yeah,
rugby rule. It was just a matter of just slimming down that law book so that referees can actually referee all of the laws, because no, they can't. There's just too much for them to look at and to concentrate on.
Yeah, Paul, what I'm trying to allude to is I completely get all of that. And, you know, I get that there are certain areas of the game which need to be simplified. And that's more to do with the lawmakers. But what I'm talking about is not being able to pick, you know, forward pass, a simple high shot, you know, foot in touch, that sort of stuff. But yet we keep – I'll give you a really good example. Last year, World Rugby come along and changed the rule where you can't score a try anymore by grounding the ball against the padding. Now, this is a very obscure rule. I've seen maybe a handful of tries scored in the last 20 years of Test rugby. But yet, there are so many blatantly obvious areas in the game which are so messy, they don't change that. So this is where the issue is. So rather than focus on all the nitty-gritty rules which might come up once in 100 years of Test footy, let's focus on the simple stuff. And I was extremely unhappy about this whole high tackle and high shot incident, because last year at the Rugby World Cup, we saw yellow, red, penalty after penalty. There's so much focus. I know all of a sudden that's gone out the window. And I seriously question whether, you know, this whole card they talk about, a card they play about player safety, is actually being seriously taken.
Yes, we'll get on to that one in a second. Aaron here makes the point, yeah, Northern Hemisphere refs would have picked these things, he thinks. Now, yes, there's definitely a different style of refereeing between the Super Rugby refs and the Northern Hemisphere and the European Hemisphere refs. I don't really say Northern because let's actually get down to what it really is. It's Europe and rest of the world. But the Super Rugby refs and the European refs, the difference is the Super Rugby refs are encouraged to let things flow more. The European refs are encouraged, I think, to be more pernickety. Or not predictive, but more precise, so to say, around the laws rather than let it flow. And so you do end up with this different styles of refereeing. Obviously, due to COVID, we're not going to see European refs come down for test matches like we would normally do into the Rugby Championship and also to the Blenheim Cup games. Hence, we've had non-neutral referees. We've had a Kiwi and an Aussie refereeing Blenheim Cups, which you would never see normally. But it's down to COVID and obviously quarantining and all of that kind of stuff. So I think you're quite right that we've seen that because of the referees we've had available to us. Now, does World Rugby care about player welfare? Yes and no. But the main reason they care about player welfare is they don't want to be sued at the end of the day. And as long as they've got their backsides covered from a legal point of view, hey, guys, go for it, pretty much. It's that legal reason, which is why Nocturnal Rights, they are not going to go for your advocation of let the players sort out the breakdown out. No, because legally they can't. Hence, the whole point of the change of scrum rules was because a couple of players at grassroots level ended up with serious injuries and sued rugby because of it, and hence that's why we have the crouch, touch, hold, or and all of that kind of piece in there now around scrums rather than the old style where they just sort of come together. Whether that makes them more or less stable is up for debate. The tackle framework in the cards now is about litigation. It's not really about player welfare.
This is something I've been working on for the last 4.5 years with my STF safe tackle framework. Again, the whole problem here is this whole high tackle framework. It's, you know, it looks great on a presentation, but it's just not pragmatic in 99% instances, especially at test rugby on the playing field. So you have to simplify this. You have to simplify this. And also players, coaches need to be educated and they need to prepare to make sure that they're compliant in a slightly different manner. Again, simplifying. What I saw on Sunday was a clear disregard to, the very existing framework. I mean, guys, if you can go have a look at that first half break where Caleb Clark goes straight through, you had the Wallaby Hunter Paisami coming around, swinging with an elbow, and then going to the edge where there was RD Savea. You know, it was all this happened right in front of the New Zealand touch judge. Now, again, there's been a lot of, stuff on social media talking about bias and whatnot. I don't think that is absolutely at all correct. You know, in the professional era, it doesn't matter whether you're a local referee because you get paid to do the job. You are a professional. You need to be refereeing. And I had absolutely no issue with Angus Gardner refereeing as well. In fact, I think he's one of the best in the world. But you saw how he didn't pick that foot in touch when Rico Ioane on that left edge, and he was looking straight at it. These are the issues which need to be looked at. Now, if the TMO needs to step in and say, look, Angus, I think there's a foot in touch, son, just call it. It's pretty simple. You know, don't let things to just kind of gloss over. Don't skirt it over. These are the simpler things. And by doing this, I think you're going to have far more fan engagement and the game will get simplified and you're going to see far more people engage and new fans come into the sport. Now, coming back to what you were talking about, litigation, Paul, it's only a matter of time before we see some sort of serious litigation because, again, you have this so-called framework, and if the very referees to enforce this framework aren't to enforce it and someone picks up a very serious injury, that's when the old proverbial would hit the fan.
Yes, but at least World Rugby has covered its backside by saying, well, the referee should have been doing this. Sue the referee, don't sue us. So, as far as they're concerned, yeah, they've got the framework in place to look after themselves, not necessarily look after the players or the referees. That's from that point of view. But yes, one point you mentioned in passing at the end there was about bringing new players into the game. Well, sorry, not bringing new players, bringing new fans into the game. Let's be honest. If you're sat there with someone who doesn't understand rugby, you can spend the whole game just explaining what the hell's going on. And at the end of the game, they still haven't got a clue because it is such a complex sport. Now, from some point of view, that's lovely because we kind of enjoy it. And as an avid fan, it's great, but it does make it partially inaccessible to the casual fan to understand what's going on. I think, look, the miking up of referees so that they explain what's going on, the series of now clearer hand gestures from referees that allow the commentators to be able to say what has happened or what their call is. Unfortunately, commentators tend to still get it wrong when you can see the referee signaling something, but because they've got so much going on in their ears, we hear the referee go in from the side and they're all like, oh, I don't think that was not releasing. If you ever get the chance to listen to what a commentator has going on in their ears from the directors, from a cameraman, it's just chaos. And it's amazing to concentrate on to commentate, to be honest. But Arun has got this brilliant one. He's wondering, is it harder to explain cricket or rugby to a novice? Cricket, again, another game that seems to be deliberately complex to try and explain to someone as to what's going on. But hey, there we go.
Paul, one thing I have to say is, and I think Nocturnal alluded to the whole player sorting out the breakdown. Now, again, the breakdown is one very fundamental area in the game, which is, you know, turned into a real mess. Once upon a time, if you're on the wrong side of the ruck, you would get rucked out. It's a brilliant rule. And then that got, you know, kind of diluted down into raking, and then that got completely taken out of the game. And now it's completely illegal. The issue here is the way the breakdown is being policed is very inconsistent right around the world. Depending on where you play, it gets policed different. Now, I remember talking to Peter Marshall, the former Australian referee, the great Peter Marshall. And one thing he made very clear was that the breakdown, he's very vocal to players, and he would say, leave it, let it come. I know that sounds quite funny. Let it come. Let the ball come out. And if someone was infringing, he'd say, out, out, away, away. And he'd be very, very, very vocal and clear. And that was one way he managed to sort out the ruck. But if you look at most games in the current context, where the focus is the, you know, the wrong areas, the areas which are very obscure. You know, you said there was a try disallowed, I'm just, you know, double movement, rightly so. But again, you know, unless you actually know the rules inside out of rugby, you know, for your casual fan, it's a try all day. But yet, there were very simple areas of the game which were being missed, where people were taken late out of the, you know, after a kick, you know, people being taken out in the ruck. We saw Hennigan come around a mall, same infringement twice. It was very deliberate. It's what you call a professional foul. And there were a number of things like that. Yet all these things get given the slip, but yet they will pick on the most obscure rules, which I'm starting to go on and on like a broken record now, which clearly is getting under the skin of your diehard hardcore fans.
Look, at the moment, to me, I'm not a great fan of the referee coaching during a game, right? These players know they shouldn't be doing this, but they're doing it to see how much you'll let them get away with. So if you don't let them get away with anything, they'll stop doing it. There's very little there that's accidental. Right, those players are deliberately in the way. They're deliberately getting there, doing an awful lot of stuff. And when you're saying, "Oh, leave it now," mate, they know they should be leaving it now. They're fully aware they shouldn't be touching that ball. So to me, yeah, just blow it. And if you blow it harshly, the players will learn very quickly, and they'll change how they play.
But yeah, look at that.
That's one of the things we've been banging on about on this channel for a number of years now. Oops, I think Boa has frozen on me, or I've frozen. But
Again, Boa,
you're back.
Well, one thing I have to say is, you know, with all this technology, with all this talk, with all this, you know, trying to simplify the game, has the refereeing improved? Okay, now I'm not talking about grassroots or volunteer stuff or, you know, weekends. I'm talking about professional game, the professional referees who get paid to do this. Has it become any less controversial? No, it hasn't. It's got even more complicated. It's got more complex. So the point I'm trying to make is, I think what is being done and how it's being done is the wrong thing. If you keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result, that's insanity. So if you want to change the result, you got to change what you're doing, how these referees are trained, what they're looking for. And of course, the game needs to be simplified. Now, that is entirely up to the lawmakers at HQ with WR. The other point I have to...
Just before you go, talking about that stuff from WR. Now, we may or we may not see a change, but what they have done is on all of their boards now, they have added... people from each of the they now have a union representative or someone from the unions, someone from the players, and someone from the female side onto all of their boards. So hopefully, we'll see some changes and some around how they do do that piece. I love Simon's suggestion here. We need Google and Amazon to develop robots for the refereeing. And we still wouldn't be happy. You know what? Perhaps that's what we need. We need an extra TMO, which is artificial intelligence, and there's some machine learning.
Well, Simon, what I'm trying to say is the game needs to be, you know, refereed in simple terms. Now, best example I give you is the use it or lose it. If you take five different referees in five different competitions, the way they blow it, they say use it. You know, if you don't use it, you lose it. 15 seconds later, the ball is still stuck in the back of the run.
That's the same across all of them. No referee ever. I've heard of one referee once blowing for that. And when he did it, he apologized. He was really kind of like, do I really have to blow you for this? You're right. No, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff like that. Yeah, that should be. There's the law book, and then there's how games are refereed, and they are two different things. Let's be blunt.
Yeah, and Nocturnal, look, I absolutely, you know, I have the greatest amount of respect for referees. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, there's an uncomfortable truth, which at the professional level, professional referees are, you know, still making a lot of very basic errors. And we need to have a constructive conversation about where and how these errors are being made and how these guys are being coached. Because, you know, if it comes down to players or coaches, for example, Rico Ioane, after his indiscretion, he was gone. You know, if that is the same level of professional accountability to these professional refs, then we need to see some kind of system and process in place which is actually working and helping to improve the game. And if these guys need help, and if they actually need to be educated or looking at how to educate themselves in a different way, then that needs to be done. I don't think that's being done. And that is the reason why we're starting to see more and more blunders, which are, you know, and I'm not talking about the real complex stuff. I'm talking about the real basic stuff.
I don't think we're seeing any more blunders than we've ever seen. Maybe a few around the fact that the game is sped up, so it's harder to spot so much with so many bodies flying around. But look, I think what we're seeing is social media people and people making mountains out of molehills around some of this stuff as well, and just not accepting that referees are human and will make mistakes. So I think I'm not sure the error rate has gone up that much. I think they are more professional. They do have more reviews around what they do. They do train better.
So they can had a very clear foot in touch with a touch judge looking straight down. All the TMO had to say was, hey, look, touchy. Put in touch, let's bring it back.
No, agreed. And there are questions around how much the TMO can and cannot involve themselves. I think they should basically be a third assistant referee that whatever they see, they can call, just like any other assistant referees. But unfortunately, that's not what is allowed as part of the protocols for the TMO. The TMO probably is not actually for that one, because I think it was within a phase or two of a try, he probably could have called that one back. But on the whole, he's generally not. As Jordan Clark says, you can talk referees until you're blue in the face, but they all have their style of their own. And if we're not careful, we are going to talk until we're blue in the face. So perhaps we should move on and have a chat about some other stuff as well. So Black Ferns. So they've got three games coming up. Well, actually, they don't. They have two games coming up, there are three games for the women's international side. We have a possibles versus probables on Saturday, the November the 7th. Great to get back to that style of that historic style of game. I'm all for that. Followed up by two games, Black Ferns versus New Zealand Barbarians on the 14th of November and then on the 21st. So the first two, one in North Harbour Stadium, then in Trust Arena over in Waitakere. So two in the Greater Auckland area. And then the third one down in Nelson. I do know that Nelson had been due to host a test match between the Black Ferns and England. Unfortunately, because of COVID, obviously, England and the Wallaroos aren't able to tour. And hence, that's why we've got these internal fixtures. But it's good to see that New Zealand Rugby is putting together these internal fixtures for our top-level women to play, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic, and especially with the Women's Rugby World Cup happening next year, I think this is huge. Wonderful opportunity, and I think NZR should really focus on taking the game to the provinces, making sure that, you know, there's a lot of fan engagement. And of course, what a wonderful opportunity for these players. And yeah, it is a bit of a shame that the English women's rugby team can't make it. But there's plenty of talent within the country. So going back to the probables, the possibles type of games, long may it continue. More, please.
So, and the 2023 Rugby World Cup, which is what they're calling it now. Personally, whilst I understand that they're trying to call it the Rugby World Cup, to show equality between them, I think we should have a men's Rugby World Cup and a women's Rugby World Cup rather than just dropping women off, because otherwise it's confusing to fans. But maybe it's also a marketing thing that you can make. But anyway, so the 2023 Rugby World Cup is obviously the women's Rugby World Cup. 2023. Sorry, that's the men's one. The 2021 is the one I'm looking for, not 2023.
Auckland, New Zealand. Yeah,
that's it's due to be held between the 18th and the of September and the 16th of October. Around about this sort of time, really, or will have just the final will have just happened about a week ago. So if you hadn't figured out, folks, what that basically means is how are the women or the girls going to prepare for this when basically they have club competition at the first half of the year, and then essentially their pre Rugby World Cup camp will be at the same time as the Farrah Palmer Cup. So I'm really looking forward. I'm really waiting to see what the what are New Zealand Rugby going to do for preparation, because they can't just go from club rugby straight into camp and play the women's rugby and play international rugby. There's got to be something they've got to put together for the first half of next year, hasn't there?
Yeah, totally. And again, this is why it's important that they look at a plan where they can take some of these games, and hopefully they put plenty of these games together in preparation within teams and within squads in New Zealand. Take the provinces, get fan engagement, get people right behind it, and just make sure that they're well tuned up, have their preparations in place. The way things are going, who knows? We might see a more compacted World Cup with not as many teams competing because of travel restrictions and quarantine, et cetera, et cetera. But let's hope that is not the case.
Yeah, let's hope they can get to, they can, even if the qualifying tournaments are difficult to do, that they actually get, they bring all the teams in. Just people aware, currently we, from Africa, they've got South Africa and Kenya have qualified. From the Americas, Canada, the USA and Colombia have qualified. From Asia, there are two places from there. One of them from the repechage, but some to come through that have yet to be assigned. From Europe, we have England, France, and Wales. There are two more to come from Europe. From Oceania, Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji, with one more from Oceania to qualify. So that's some. So we've still got five more teams that need to qualify for the Rugby World Cup in 2021, and it will be interesting to see who or how that happens. But what I'm thinking is, look, over in Australia, they have Super W, which is a four-team women's competition around their four Super Rugby franchises, obviously excluding the Force at the moment. That's exactly what I'm saying here. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some sort of Super Rugby competition put together. Now, the problem with that is at the moment is that, let's be honest, the Highlanders franchise, the Highlanders, in South Island, basically you've got the Crusaders, Otago, Southland have a team, Otago and Tasman both aren't really up to it. In the North Island, we're looking at Manawatu is the other South Conference qualifier for the Farrah Palmer Cup semi-finals. Up north, with the strength of Auckland counties, Northland, Waikato, Blair of Plenty, you can see how you could definitely get an Auckland and a Chiefs team together. Maybe actually having a French, maybe having one of those ones in Manawa too, Wellington, and then Christchurch might be the five, sort of Auckland, Waikato, Auckland, Hamilton, Palmerston North, Wellington, and Christchurch might be the way to do it, rather than trying to map exactly the same as the men's Super Rugby. But we'll have to wait and see how that all kind of pans out. But I do think we need some sort of Super W Aotearoa to give the women the right kind of preparation ahead of the Rugby World Cup. But there have been kind of rumours that something was going to come, what was going to be put in place. Clearly, COVID and the loss of revenue that New Zealand Rugby have had has kind of put a damper on that. And we'll try and see what we can find out from our union contacts over the coming months. On the women's side, World Rugby have also given their guidelines on trans women's participation in that, which is interesting. We're talking about, as you said earlier, why did World Rugby get involved in scoring against the pads at the bottom of the post? Did it really need them to get involved there? Is it something that happens so regularly? Again, we've not heard of any trans women that I'm aware of anyway playing at international level, but somehow, for some reason, World Rugby has gone and got involved in, let's be honest, what is a cutting edge issue in sport. And that's why rugby union is not known for its it's known for its traditional values and trying to avoid getting involved in cutting edge issues. Look, this is a complicated one, folks. It's not simple. But World Rugby have basically, their guidelines are that trans women cannot take part in international rugby, trans men can, and that they have suggested that the unions beneath that don't allow trans women to take part in club rugby competition. But a number of unions have already said no, they're not going to enforce that, and they're going to stay the way they are. So there we go. Look, rugby, I understand the situation around safety, but if we talk about safety, we look at the Farrell Palmer Cup. We've got some of the players are literally twice the weight of some of the other players already. It's supposed to be a game for all shapes and sizes. You've got to say, actually, should you really have players half the weight of others on the same rugby pitch, which we do see at Farrell Palmer Cup level? I don't know. I'm not sure that Nocturnal Rights suggests it's litigation. But anyway, we'll see how this develops over the coming years. As I say, it's cutting edge at the moment. The research still needs to be done more of, but that's come up.
Yeah, Paul, that's a very valid point. I mean, I've been doing a little bit of reading around the scientific literature about this whole, you know, transgender athletes, especially in contact and things like unarmed combat sport, so on and so forth, and some very interesting literature coming out. So from a safety point of view, I think this is probably a very politically correct and very politically sensitive, socially sensitive issue as well. I'm a little bit reserved and quite hesitant to actually jump into this whatsoever without actually doing some solid reading around the scientific literature. But you know, safety is paramount, and hopefully there will be some logical guidance around what future decisions are made in respect to this policy making. And let's hope, you know, it's just simple logic prevails as opposed to trying to further complicate this game.
Yeah, and look, it's something that they've said that they will be revisiting on an annual basis, because it like you say, the literature around it and the research around it is still very new. I think one of the problems we do have is that a lot of people are commenting on it without having read or having any knowledge of the research in this particular space. And that's why, as you can tell, I'm hedging my comments both ways, as again, I don't feel qualified enough. I'm qualified enough, though I've read enough to know that I'm not qualified enough to comment on it. I guess is where I'm at.
Well, there's two of us. Well, you know, give me another 4 to 5 weeks, because as I said, I'm especially with Safe Tackle Framework work I'm doing, doing actually quite a bit of reading around this, trying to understand where the science, where the logic, and where the evidence, so that we can actually make some informed decisions. So watch this space.
Exactly. Let's move on then to the Rugby Championship, and the Springboks have pulled out of the Rugby Championship. Now, John O'Connor was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that he thought that if the Springboks pulled out of this, this was an indication that they were heading north, and that basically, look, this is the end of the Rugby Champion. This is the end of the Springboks as part of SANZAAR. They've got their place in the Six Nations. What is your view? Do you think we can read more into it? Or is this just a one-off this year, the Springboks pulling out?
No, definitely. There's very clear intent here. They want to go up north. There's been a lot of banter, especially on social media, about the Springboks boycotting. And so there's been certain quarters saying chickening out. And I was actually talking to a very avid All Black fan the other day. And he said, oh, guess what? Springboks are going to take up dodgeball. Maybe they should be the but look, I've got a slightly different take on it. The immediate concern is obviously, you know, financially, SARU are really struggling. So I don't know how much more financial stress this non-participation boycott, call it what you may, of the Springboks is going to do to the union. And of course, at some point, you know, this will affect the players' pay packets. So there's definitely that element. You know, I'm actually really disappointed that the Springboks are not there. I was actually really looking forward to Springboks being in the championship, and I just wanted to see some of these good old fashioned rivalries come back to life. Fortunately, that's not going to happen. And look, end of the day, they are the world champions, and yeah, they could be underdone. They came up with this fanciful theory saying they need at least 400 minutes per player for high performance to be playing test rugby. All that is wonderful and great. But end of the day, you know, if you're a rugby team, you need to be out there playing rugby. And it's from a fan's point of view, it's extremely disappointing. But it is what it is, Paul. It is what it is.
It is. Now, one of the things that's... very disappointed that they're not going to play there from a sort of spectator point of view. Now, one of the suggestions that John he was talking about, yeah, preserving the reputation, all that kind of stuff, rather than necessarily being all about player welfare. And I think there's definitely an element of that. But also, I don't think it's apparently not going to be the financial hit that we all kind of assumed. So according to somebody from Daily Maverick, who the sports editor Craig Ray, now, no idea. It's not a source that I'm overly aware of, so I don't know how how much we can how valid this is. But he, according to this one, the South Africa rugby would have earned 189 million rand. Now, I don't know how much that is in real money, as it were, or in a currency that I understand, shall I say, rather than real money. That's a bit harsh.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Okay, but in reality, apparently, what they will earn is 130 million, even though they don't take part. So they're only missing out on 59 million rand, not the whole 189. If you think they've also got, in theory, the Lions Tour coming next year, which is the biggest earner for Southern Hemisphere countries. I mean, New Zealand's talked about the fact that basically it's a 12-year top-up that they then have to eke out over the next 12 years because they get such a big income from it. You can actually say that, look, yes, they're in trouble, but they can see where the money's coming from without having to go to the Six Nations. So I'm not so convinced that yes, South Africa would like to play in the Six Nations, don't get me wrong, but I don't think this is a clear indication that it's a done deal.
Yeah, and Paul, the other thing I have to say is, you know, what I was going to say is, I think, you know, we need to congratulate and commend Argentina for the very fact that, you know, they're being professional about the whole thing and they're turning up and they are fulfilling their professional obligations. under tremendous, stress, pressure, and the current prevailing climate. So, the Springboks should have showed up. They should have sent possibly a second string, third string team. Doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, you're a rugby team. What do? You're supposed to play rugby. It's just a little bit hypocritical because the Springboks and especially their fans tend to blame and have a go at New Zealand fans, All Black fans, of being self-centered. But this is a classic case of them wanting to look after their reputation, a bit of self-preservation, and obviously the easiest way to hang on to being undefeated after the World Cup is not to play any rugby at all. And if we have a significant outbreak of a pandemic, which is possible, maybe they could go World Cup to World Cup being undefeated without playing any rugby. How's that for?
My undefeated MMA record is forever. I've never been defeated in the octagon. I've also never set foot inside an octagon, and I wouldn't. But there you go. Yes, there is an element of that. I can see that. It is disappointing. You've got to say congratulations to Argentina for turning up. Look, and they are, let's be honest, we wouldn't expect the Pumas to beat the All Blacks. And we wouldn't expect them to, they haven't done in however many years they've been playing. Their wins against the Wallabies are few and far between as well. But under this situation where they've had no warm-up games at all, their only warm-up game, from my understanding, is this weekend against the Waratahs. Now, will the Waratahs even have their Wallabies players available? I don't know. Good luck to the Pumas. I hope they put up a fight. I'm sure they will try to, but I think all the cards are stacked against them here in this one. Let's just hope they're as competitive as they can be, in all honesty. Let's look, the head coach has had COVID. I think some of the players might have had COVID as well. They've had to recover from that. It has been, to say it's been far from ideal is to put it mildly. It's been a very, very difficult and poor one for them.
Yeah, look, they've had setback after setback. You know, they've had multiple issues with people testing positive. You know, they had to be isolated. But again, in the professional era, this is the living epitome or the example of a team fulfilling their professional obligation. Something probably the Springboks and South African Rugby Union could learn a thing or two. But extremely disappointing. But I think we should move on from this one.
Yeah, so how could we fill the gap? Well, Noctana Wright says, could the teams be play Aussie rep sides in the gaps? Possibly. But I think Aussie Barbarians, look, the Australia doesn't have the Shoot Shield is going on at the moment. There's a club competition, but it doesn't have a Mitre 10 Cup at the moment. A Barbarian side, I think, would to fill the gap would be fantastic, personally. Make them sort of exhibition games. We've already heard that the All Blacks are going to be taking an extended squad over to Australia because of quarantine restrictions. So now whether that's still the case with the sort of travel corridor that's been mentioned, I've not been seeing the news around this, so I don't know the details around that travel corridor thing, whether that's still the case. But look, it would give the extended squad players a chance to play rather than just going across Australia and basically warming the bench for a month and a half or however long it is that the tournament's going on for. I'd be all for Barbarians and some sort of exhibition games to be played in their off weekends.
Yeah, I mean, Paul, another possibility would have been to get residential Pacific Islands players who are based in New Zealand, Australia, to form a 15 and be involved in some form or shape, maybe a couple of games, possibly against the Pumas. But again, there's all these financial and professional contracts sitting in the background.
Friend of ours, Dwayne, who is obviously down in playing for Tasman, is the Samoan current number 9. Would Tasman have given him that contract if they knew they were going to lose him during the Rugby Championship to go play for a Barbarians team? Possibly not. Probably not, in all honesty. So is he going to make himself available for that when he's got this professional contract for a maybe? You've got to say he's got to go where the money is. And, I think expecting to be able to pull together I've gone blank now. That Pacifica side would be a bit of an ask. I think a Barbarian's one where you can pull anybody who's available is perhaps a more realistic proposition.
Indeed.
Simon makes a good point. Yes, look, we've got a couple of international friendlies going on. We've got France versus Wales. Now, that was going to be an interesting one because the French Rugby Union and the top 14 have fallen out around this one because it's outside the window, the international window. So it looks so quite what French team will turn up for that Welsh friendly is going to be interesting as a euphemism I'll use there. Scotland playing Georgia. That'll be good to see for Georgia to be able to peg themselves against them. And then Ireland playing Italy as the Six Nations resumes after, let's be honest, a very, very long layoff. There are those games going on. We will, I will have my predictions going up probably tomorrow, hopefully, on nzsportradio.com. So folks, do head over there for those predictions. I'll try and get them up tomorrow evening for that.
Question mark over France v Wales, because I understand Wales are going to go into extreme lockdown for the next couple of weeks. I don't know how all that is going to affect the preparation and possibly travel plans of the Welsh international rugby team.
And there's also talk about, I think Wales were looking at trying to find a London or a UK or an England based venue for some of their games because of, as you say, because of the extra restrictions in Wales. I'll be honest, I'm not on top of all of that at the moment as to why, quite what's going on there. You've got to say, look, there is, and again, another topic I've not been on top of is the raise, is what COVID cases rates are like in Europe at the moment. From what I understand, from just vague things I've heard, it's on the up. There's got to be some question marks as to whether the international season will actually even happen in Europe. Number one is going to be people's safety, but obviously we would love for them to happen for us to be able to watch rugby, because we just love watching international rugby, let's be honest. And Simon, you're right, England also playing the Barbarians this weekend, which you've got to say, again, with the top 14 going on, I guess it's Pro 14 pre-season, you've got the Gallagher Premiership final this weekend. So maybe actually there are a number of England and Pro 14 based players who can actually take part in that Barbarian site. Might be a decent one, actually, thinking about it.
Well, a number of players from Wasps have tested positive for COVID-19 as well. So there's some implications there. And I was listening to Pat Lamb, the Bristol Bears coach, because if one of the teams forfeit, they might have to take their position. And he was rightly saying that, you know, these teams deserve to be in the finals far more than, you know, we do. So some really interesting stuff. And I have to say, Paul, hats off and, you know, some very commendable initiative from the English RFU. They live stream some of their training sessions on social media. That got some really good engagement. You know, my son, he was like, Dad, you know, look, check this out. And again, you know, this is the sort of innovation you need. Again, it's a very simple form of innovation, just getting more fans engaged. Because, you know, rugby fans, any type of sport fan, what do they want to do? Watch sport. So, you know, that's a bit outside box thinking. And also in the modern day, it's not very regularly you see open to public training sessions. So for them to do that, I think, you know, you got to give them credit where credit's due. Well done to the English RFU.
So for those people who are unaware, Exeter Chiefs versus Wasps is the scheduled Gallagher Premiership final on this coming weekend. Wasps, as you say, I think they had four more positive cases. I think it was yesterday amongst their playing staff. And you got to say, look, this coming weekend, what kind of team can they put together, and what kind of team should they be able to? Can they even train this week? ahead of that game. There's got to be question marks. Bristol, as you say, are lined up as a replacement. Now, the reason for this essentially is that the Gallagher Premiership is cash-strapped. All these clubs, bar one, make a loss normally, okay? So any clawback money that BT would make by them not playing games would be devastating for them, and hence they will do whatever it takes to play these all of their fixtures, including playing three games in a week and play midweek games, which, let's be honest, shows you that player welfare comes well after pounds for those clubs. The only club that does make a profit is Exeter Chiefs. Now, Exeter Chiefs, the reason they make a profit is their ground is essentially a conference centre that happens to be shaped like a rugby ground. And as you can imagine, conferences and the big gatherings of people have been impacted by COVID, and hence their alternate source of income that they use to fund their rugby club also has taken a hit. So I'd expect there's a high chance Exeter Chiefs will make a loss this year. So all of the Gallagher Premiership teams are being hit seriously financially, and that is why we're seeing these games happen come hell or high water. They will happen. And even if it is basically the tea ladies playing against each other, they'll play a game just to meet their TV commercial obligations. A couple of things in there. Simon mentions that Ireland is going into lockdowns. Well, yeah, I think I saw some tweets around about that. Again, I don't know the details, but apparently sport will be exempt from the lockdown. Which is an interesting one.
Yeah, there. Very interesting. Professional sport is exempt from COVID-19. What can I say?
Look, people say, oh, yeah, well, look, why can they do that and we can't do this? Okay. Part of the reason that you can give exemptions around things like professional sport is, number one, it's a small number of people you're having to handle. You're not talking about it's when you think about, okay, if you're flying over, it's the Italian rugby squad. You are taking basically a group of maybe like 30, 40 people. You're not talking about hundreds of thousands or even millions of people moving around the country doing something, right? So it's a small number of people that you can contain. Secondly, these sports teams have the cash to be able to do things like, we will hire this entire hotel. We will to actually provide bubbles and space around it. And they can pay for extra security. They can pay for extra cleaners. They can pay for these sort of things to allow the bubble to travel safely into a country. To allow groups to travel in a bubble through a country and back out again. And also pay for the extra number of tests that need to happen and all those sort of things. So when people say, oh, why can't we have our conference, or why can't we play football when those 30 people can? Well, it's because it's only 30 or 40 people. It's not hundreds it's not thousands across the country that don't have the cash to spend that sort of thing. It has the optics aren't necessarily very good, but that's the reality behind it. Comment about the All Black squad today. Sorry, I haven't seen the All Black squad today, so I don't actually. I've been counting pieces of paper to give you the official count of the election. So sorry, folks, I've not seen the All Black squad today. But we'll definitely cover.
So Griffey, Duplessis in, and also the Crusaders prop is George. He's in. So two uncut players as cover, one for Joe Moody and for Adi Sevier, who's possibly going to be on parental leave. So very excited for Duplessis Corifi, because I think he had a tremendous season with the Hurricanes. Probably we'll see another debut, just like what Umaga Jensen, another one of the Hurricanes from down Wellington, will quite possibly get into a black jersey. George Bauer, yep.
There we go. Bauer, thank you very much. We've overrun on the hour, but thank you so much for your time. It's been great having you on the show yet again.
Pleasure. Folks,
Thank you. Folks, don't forget that our new sort of schedule has the swinging from the hip on a Monday night at 8 p.m. That's your quickesting fix for the week. The Driving Mall show on a Tuesday night at 8 p.m., your rugby fix. And then the standoff show on a Wednesday night at 8 p.m., which is your league fix. Obviously, the NRL coming to its conclusion soon. If there is a sport that you would like to talk about, then please do let me know, and we can look at putting together shows. I don't know. Are you into judo? Are you into mixed martial arts? Are you into kayaking? Are you into windsurfing? What is the sport that you're into? Folks, please let me know if you would like to be on a show talking about a sport that you love. As long as you meet the or agree to the channel's values of respect. I've got oh, dear me, I'm blank now. Respect, knowledge, and what's our third one? I've gone blank. Can you remember, Bella? Oh dear.
I have sorry, dude. Sorry, Douglas. I'll probably get a call from the referees society tomorrow after watching this episode. So, refs, I think first of all, just strictly professional. I think we need to have a very robust conversation. That's it.
So yeah, so folks, if you're willing to stick by the channel's values, then we'd love to have you as presenters on the show. Happy to take you through all of how it all works and look after you. So do let us know if there are any sports that you would like to talk about. Thank you very much again, Boa. Thank you everyone who's joined us in the live chat. It's been a fantastic show, and catch you all next week on the Driving Mall Show.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.